This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This show is powered by you. That's right, you. The lovely people buying their wares through the voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon portal. The beautiful, strong, hopefully moderately wealthy, and cocksure people that bookmark voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and do their shopping through the click-through link. You all achieve just a little bit more superstardom every time you buy something and help out the show. Just go to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. We thank you. That's voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. Welcome, everybody, to the KMP Show, episode number 7. See, I remember this time. Everybody, fans of the Lefty Show, remember. It's a big thing when I remember episode numbers. It is, my name is John Playtech.
You big old bitch.
Here with a shorty for you today. Rich is out and about doing his things. And as I've said, you know, our drive for content, from time to time, there will be shorties like this, or maybe it'll be a shorty. Who knows? We got a lot to talk about today. Where I, you know, in the interest of pushing out content, I will put something out for you, and then we will reconvene. We will reconcile, Rich and I, for more episodes of the KMP Show in studio, and have a great time. So, thank you all for joining the KMP Show. You can follow me on Twitter at John's Voices. You can also follow the show at KNP Show. That's KANDP Show, KNP Show on Twitter. You can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Just search The KMP Show, and also be sure to check out the regular feed of the show at kandpshow.com. That's kandpshow.com. Thank you, everybody, that's been sharing the show with your friends, family, coworkers, everybody. If you like sports, I'm sure you know other people that like sports, and helping the show is a great way to help us grow in an organic way. So thank you to everybody that's been sharing the show, saying, hey, you know, these guys do some pretty cool stuff. They had this whole segment about making fun of Mike Francesa and his
game used cork.
They had a whole bit about that, and it was really funny.
You want that cork? Here it is.
And go the other way.
That'll never get old to me. I don't know why. It will never, ever get old. But thank you to everybody. You know, you share the show. Hey, these guys are pretty funny. They talk about sports. They've got unique insights, and you should check them out. It's a great way to help the show grow. You can also bookmark, again, voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon. And whenever you shop through Amazon, a little bit comes to help us out. So bookmark that click-through link. Tell everybody you know to bookmark that. Shopping through Amazon can help the KMP Show, as well as the voicesofwrestling.com brand. Everything that they got going on there. Tons of great stuff on voicesofwrestling.com, and you can follow them at Voices Wrestling on Twitter. Like I said, we got a lot to talk about today. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's been going on. There's been a lot of crap. I'm looking at what I printed out. There's a new Peyton Manning incident. We're going to talk about that, or really it's a, we're going back now. We're combing through. We've entered that phase where we're combing through everything that's ever happened in Peyton Manning's life, looking for a reason that he might have rubbed his balls on this trainer's chin, which, by the way, apparently we're all believing now that this happened. We're just taking it at face value and saying, oh, well, he rubbed his balls on her chin. That's exactly what happened. I know that happened. I was basically there. I saw it. It's been unadjudicated. It's uncorroborated. Actually, that's not true. It isn't uncorroborated because the man, Peyton Manning, said he was trying to moon, swore under oath that he was never mooned by Peyton Manning. So it is not technically uncorroborated. However, it is still, the claim is still unadjudicated. And we're going to talk a little bit about Kesha. It is indeed going down. But I don't think she's yelling timber. And I'm going to try to tie it all in. You watch, you listen, you're going to think, "Oh man, how is he going to make this about sports? I don't know. It's Kesha. Does she have any sports ties?" Believe you me, I will make it. I will make it sing. I will make it fly. We'll talk about Kesha and her lack of an injunction regarding Dr. Luke. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the NBA trade deadline has come and gone. And when Rich and I started this show, we're both from Chicago. And the drive is always there to talk about to talk about Chicago sports. But something came up, and it's getting a little bit of national play concerning Pau Gasol, and I just wanted to float my thoughts out there, let people consume them, see what everybody thinks about my thoughts on the NBA trade deadline, and specifically what it means for the Chicago Bulls and GM Gar Forman and team president John Paxson. I believe that's his role as team president. I think he's like one step above. It's Gar Pax is the term used here in Chicago to describe the tandem, because it's John Paxson. If you believe that John Paxson doesn't have at least a little bit to do with what Gar Forman does and does not do, well, then you are sadly mistaken in the world of Chicago sports. But we got a lot to talk about today. I'm going to try to keep it concise, but you know what? I do like to talk, and this is a podcast, and people like to listen to podcasts. So there we go. Boom. Now, I did mention Kesha, and I mentioned injunctions, and I mentioned uncorroborated, unadjudicated rape allegations or sexual assault allegations, and I'm going to try to make this whole thing fly. But yesterday, there was a big story circulating around social media and on the blogosphere, on news sites were writing about it. Kesha, the artist, we'll call her Kesha hereafter Kesha, was denied in a New York Supreme Court. It's not New York uses the title Supreme Court, but it's not the Supreme Court of New York. It is actually their lowest level of state court. They just call it the Supreme Court. I don't know why. It sounds really cool. But Kesha was trying to get granted an injunction against Sony and I don't know if this guy's an employer, the producer known as Dr. Luke. Kesha was trying to get an injunction granted that would allow her to be free of her recording contract with Sony that ties her to the record label for 6 albums. She alleged that Dr. Luke attempted to sexually assaulted her by feeding her, making her snort a crushed up roofie, and then on a flight, I believe out west when she was 18 years old, and she says she woke up in a hotel room and he had sexually assaulted her, and she cannot work, Kesha alleges, with Dr. Luke anymore. Therefore, this judge, the state of New York, should grant an injunction that would allow Kesha to be free from this contract, meaning the state of New York would tell Sony, no, this contract doesn't mean anything. You are prohibited from trying to enforce this contract against Kesha. It would effectively free Kesha from her contract. That motion was denied yesterday by a New York judge who happened to be female. I don't want to play up that angle that, oh, well, you cry, feminist crying about this and that, but the judge was female. I don't want to play that up. But that motion was denied by the judge hearing the motion, and there's another lawsuit that's going on, and that will proceed. But there was a big to do yesterday because, well, Kesha's motion for an injunction was denied, and now she is still tied to this heavily negotiated music contract with Sony again. It is not that that Kesha was trying to say, oh, well, this Dr. Luke D-bag is, I let me free from my contract with him. She is saying, I need to be free from Sony because this guy's a D-bag and I allege that he did all these things. And the interesting part is that once this decision was handed down on this motion, Twitter blew up. There were in media blogs about, there was one entitled How We Failed to Protect Kesha, as if Kesha needed some kind of protection from us, the collective us. And it's odd because whenever something happens with I don't want to play up that angle, but a male athlete, and people seemingly rush to defend them. Peyton Manning, Patrick Kane, Evander Kane, and Ben Roethlisberger. I'm sure it happened during that time. When people rush to defend these people in times of these allegations, a lot of people are quick to remind you, they're not your friend. You don't owe them anything. They don't need you to defend them. They don't need you, bros, dudes on Twitter, to defend Patrick Kane or to defend Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning doesn't care if you defend him. You don't need to defend him, blah, and then so on and so forth. But all of a sudden, when it's Kesha, and Kesha has a motion to grant injunctive relief, all of a sudden we, the collective we, need to protect Kesha. Now, there's a few parallels here between what's going on with Kesha and the outrage about that and the sporting world. The first of which is the unabashed power, the ability of an uncorroborated or otherwise unadjudicated claim of sexual assault or rape, the power that has over people. And the power we've allowed it to have over people, whether informal or regimented or otherwise, the power we've allowed that to have. That's first off. Second off, the second parallel here is just it's not so much making a point as it is to help you understand. OK, here's an injunction. As I understand it, this is my time to say I'm not an attorney, though I play one on this podcast. An injunction, I don't really play one on this podcast. I'm not giving you legal advice, so please don't take legal advice from me. An injunction is one of the most powerful avenues of remedy that a court, or rather a judge, has at their disposal. They, via an injunction, a court exercises dominion over a person and can order them with the power of being in violation of a court order and all that entails if they do not comply, order them to do or not do something. That is the power of injunction. It's not as bad as being ordered to pay somebody money damages. The court is ordering you, Joe Blow, to do this or not do that, to refrain from it. They are an injunction. By its very nature, restricts you as a person. It restricts whether you are a corporate entity, a non-human person, or an actual person. It restricts your inherent freedom. Real-life case of an injunction, it is a form of an injunction, is a restraining order. And think about how powerful a restraining order is, because without any adjudication, a judge can say, well, that is, I guess, a form of adjudication, but without a trial, without any kind of what would, I guess, be called due process, a judge can say, you, Joe Blow, are prohibited from going here, doing this or that. That is a form of an injunction. And that is what Kesha sought. And as such, courts tend to be very fickle with injunctions. They tend to be very, very fickle. The sports tie-in here is that in Chicago, the Northside team, the Chicago Cubs, play in Wrigleyville. And I believe it's one square city block is where is the footprint of Wrigley Field. Perhaps it's two. Wrigley Field sits in a footprint of an otherwise urban neighborhood. And as such, there are three or four story brownstones that surround the outfield of Wrigley Field. And for the longest time, since for as long as I've been a sports fan watching Cubs games on TV, people have been able to go to the rooftop of those Wrigleyville. That's what they call the immediate area surrounding Wrigley Field. The Wrigleyville rooftop owners have been able to, you go, if you live in that building or you own it, you can go up on top of the roof and watch Cubs games from like really far away. And I don't know how you very much see anything, but you can do that. Now, in I believe it was the 1990s or the early 2000s, the Chicago Cubs sued the Wrigleyville rooftop owners. And as a result, the rooftop owners, because the rooftop owners built a seating, stadium seating, onto the top of their buildings, which must have been a mother humper of a bitch to get through any kind of procedure in the city of Chicago to say, hey, we want to build stadium seating on top of our like three-story brownstone. Is that cool? Is that all right? as a result, there was a contract struck between the collective rooftop owners and the Chicago Cubs. And when the new ownership group, the Ricketts Group, took over ownership of the Chicago Cubs, they tried to push through stadium expansion, including video boards, huge video boards that would block the view. Now, part of this contract to save the details of it all, part of this contract between the Cubs and the rooftop owners said, we the Cubs will not obstruct your view, blah, 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 blah. And there's room there for interpretation. Anyway, the Cubs pushed through through the city of Chicago an expansion to build a huge video board. And the Wrigleyville rooftop owner said, wait a minute! Hold on! We have this contract with you that says you won't do this. Whoever owns the Chicago Cubs will not do that. And they the rooftop owners, sued the Chicago Cubs in court for a breach of contract. And pursuant to that litigation, while they were litigating a material breach of contract, which the nature of the breach was such that it would kill the business of the rooftop owners because their views would be obstructed by these expansions, by these video boards, signage, etc. And while they were litigating this and the Chicago Cubs were beginning the renovations and starting to erect the video boards, the rooftop owners went to a judge and tried to get a preliminary injunction. They tried to get the Chicago Cubs court to tell the Chicago Cubs, stop doing this. Until this litigation concludes, you are precluded from doing that. Okay, and this is, they had a contract that said in no uncertain terms, you should not do this. And the Cubs, at least on face value, on the surface of things, were in breach of this very expensive agreement. The judge said no. Even while they were erecting the video board, they were expanding the bleachers, they were doing all this, and the rooftop owners tried to say, this will kill our business, at least tell them to stop until we can figure out whether they are in breach, but it pretty much looks like they're in breach. The judge said no. And that is how fickle judges tend to be with injunctions, as they should be, because they are incredibly, incredibly powerful. So to give you an idea, that is a sports analogy that will give you an idea of why a judge may be reluctant to hand out an injunction. Now, back to the first sports parallel here. An uncorroborated, unadjudicated rape allegation by the music star Kesha should not be enough to nix a contract. It should not be enough for a judge to say, that's it, Sony, you are hereby precluded from forevermore trying to enforce this contract. And by the way, Kesha in 2011, this is from New York Daily News, Kesha once testified under oath that the alleged date rape at the center of her new lawsuit against Dr. Luke never took place, but her lawyer claimed she was simply too scared to sing. The platinum-selling pop artist said in secret deposition testimony given in June of 2011 and unsealed Tuesday that music producer Dr. Luke never, quote, roofied her or coerced her into sex, quote, Dr. Luke never made sexual advances at me, she testified under oath, according to transcripts obtained by the Daily News. The testimony contradicts allegations made in the blockbuster sexual assault lawsuit that the TikTok singer filed against Dr. Luke in Los Angeles on October 14th. Kesha, by the way, said that in 2011, this never took place. So not only are they uncorroborated and unadjudicated rape allegations, we have in 2011 Kesha saying, no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. And still people call for an injunction against Sony Music to be granted by a judge. And my problem is this, is that especially in the case of Peyton Manning, who has another unadjudicated sexual assault allegation, Patrick Kane, an uncorroborated, unadjudicated sexual assault rape allegation levied against him last summer. The problem is, we are ever creeping forward towards these kinds of things, claims at their taken at their face value, having real tangible impact. And the problem is, the problem I have and the problem I see is that I don't see anybody pushing back. I don't see anybody saying, hey, you know what? Patrick Kane hasn't been even charged with a crime. Why is it okay to say that he shouldn't be allowed to attend Blackhawks training camp? Peyton Manning hasn't been charged with a crime, or nor has this claim been adjudicated on any level specifically as to the fact or fiction of it. Why is it okay to call for him to not be the sponsor of this or that? Why should he suffer a loss simply because of these claims, and that's all they are at this point, being made by these people? The problem is that we're creeping ever forward, because the common defense for people that say, well, Patrick Kane isn't your friend and Peyton Manning isn't your friend, but Kesha is your friend and we need to protect her. The common refrain is, well, we're not saying Patrick Kane and Peyton Manning are guilty of a crime. We're not saying that at all. We aren't advocating their being put in jail or them being fined or be put on probation or any kind of formal punishment, some kind of formal criminal punishment. We're not advocating for any of that. We're just advocating that they not be allowed to do things like not allowed to show up to training camp, not allowed to be the spokesperson for Papa John's Nationwide, Buick, whatever anymore. That's all that we're proposing. And my problem is that I see it creeping ever more towards, it's not just enough anymore to say that Patrick Kane is a bad dude, because he is. It's not just enough anymore to say that Peyton Manning is a bad dude, because he probably is. It's now to a point where, well, you're a bad guy, and you should not be allowed to make as much money, or you should make less money, or you shouldn't be allowed to do this. And people hide behind the informalness of it all and say, well, we're not advocating for formal punishment. But still, everything's becoming more and more regimented and formal, because now all it does take is a claim, an allegation, regardless of how true it may be. All it takes is an allegation. And now we are going, now Patrick Kane is dropped from the cover of NHL 16. Now Peyton Manning, people are advocating he be dropped as the spokesperson for this or that from allegations from 20 years ago. And it's gotten to the point now that an allegation has prompted this. This is a story from the Washington Post. The mysterious 1994 incident between Peyton Manning and a Tennessee trainer. The court document, the Daily News, this is from later on in the article, there was a big preamble. The court document, the Daily News released last week, came from this defamation case. The document describes Norwright's version of the 1996 incident and then her depiction of an ensuing cover-up orchestrated by Tennessee athletics officials, some of whom had sexually harassed her, she said. The court document calls the 1996 encounter the second Manning incident. The first, Norwright's lawyers wrote, happened in the fall of 1994 and is detailed in a sealed section that follows the heading Peyton Manning's Motive and Malice. Quote, in the fall of 1994, an incident occurred involving Peyton Manning, which will not only explain the genesis for Peyton Manning's dislike for Dr. Norwright, but will be relevant to understanding the 1996 incident. End quote, Norwright's lawyers wrote. The next 3.5 pages are blank. Manning's lawyers asked for all references to the 1994 event be redacted from any court document that eventually would become public record. Norwright's lawyers agreed. Among thousands of pages of court documents in Polk County, Florida, related to the 2002 defamation case, dozens of pages of depositions are missing chunks of testimony under redacted stamps. There's one discussion of a 1994 incident that escaped redaction, though. It came during a deposition of former Tennessee athletic director Doug Dickey, taken in Knoxville, Tennessee, on October 16th, 2002. Excuse me as I flip. Here is the exchange between Norwright's lawyer, Bob Pewterball and Dickey. Question. Were you aware that in 1994, Dr. Norwright was a guest lecturer in a course taught by Carmen Tagano? Answer, no. Question. Do you recall it ever being reported by Carmen Tagano or anyone else that Dr. Norwright had spoken to Carmen Tagano about the possibility of Peyton Manning having committed academic fraud in that course? Answer. No. Then later on in the article, it says, Tagano still works, this is Carmen Tagano, Tagano still works at Tennessee as an associate athletics director. Reached by phone this week, he said he does not remember Norite ever accusing Manning of cheating academically. Quote, it's 20 years ago, and it's hard to remember all this, Tagano said. He added, however, that he remembered the specific class in which the cheating allegation would have happened. Quote, it was a one-hour pass-fail class that was required of all athletes, and under no circumstances did Peyton Manning cheat. The class was based on attendance. It was an orientation class, Tagano said. Do you think he needed to cheat in a pass-fail class? We're talking about a man who graduated with one of the highest grade point averages in his class, end quote. That is the power in today's current climate. Across all genres of media, not just sports. You see it everywhere. If you're on Twitter or you're on Facebook or you read Blogospheres, you read Gawker, you read The Independent, you read HuffPost, The Washington Post, The New York Daily News. It's everywhere where an unadjudicated allegation of sexual assault has now gotten to the point where we are going back and looking at a 1994, when Peyton Manning was a freshman at the University of Tennessee, 2 years before the actual allegation is said to have occurred, for motivation to a pass-fail attendance-based course. Attendance-based course for motivation for Peyton Manning. Why would Peyton Manning have rubbed his balls on this woman's chin? Let's go back to 1994. That is the power we have allowed these things to have. We have granted this. The problem is rooted in listen and believe. There's no room anymore for skepticism, and we've allowed it to happen. My biggest problem is that there's nobody saying, nobody raising their hand. There's nobody that seems, I hate using that word. There's nobody that seems ballsy enough to say, hey, you know what? What if this doesn't mean anything? Hey, you know what? These allegations aren't corroborated on many levels, and I don't feel the need to go back so far to try to corroborate them, and whether they are true is immaterial to me. And what's more, I don't like the fact that this is given so much, there's so much columns, so many column inches, so much airtime devoted to this, and it's all believing, taking the allegations at face value. And I don't think it's fair. Nobody has the balls to say, I don't think it's fair to advocate for an informal punishment of somebody based on nothing more than allegations, especially in the case of Kesha, where those allegations were contradicted in 2011. And in Patrick Kane's case, the New York district attorney for that area came right up to the point and said, you know what? The accuser is probably lying. And I don't think it's fair to levy or advocate informal punishment on these people. And there's nobody that I have to side with Jason Whitlock? I don't want to, but he seems to be the only person that's willing to do it. He's willing to just, for the click views, obviously. It's not because he has an independent thought in his head and honestly believes it. He just knows if he takes the contrarian point, people will click and watch and listen and et cetera, just to yell at him for a little bit. But everybody seems so scared of having Twitter minions sent their way, of being called a perpetuator of rape culture. Not taking the allegations of Dr. Norite at face value isn't perpetuating rape culture. It's called being skeptical. In today's modern society, in identity politics, in the age of the social justice warrior, any amount of skepticism is met with calls of patriarchy, rape culture, misogyny, et cetera, and people have just been browbeaten into just being not skeptical at all. And now you turn to sports pundits and you don't want them to be skeptical. You just want them to say, oh, well, yeah, Peyton Manning's a bad dude. Let's go. Boom, boom. Next story. And it's really problematic for me. It's something that really sticks in my craw because as somebody who enjoys discourse, skeptical thought, all these stories, all this outrage seems incredibly misplaced, or at least ahead of the curve. We're not there yet. If it's true, all this outrage is certainly warranted, but we're not there yet. We're not even close. And it's a major source of contention for me. And the fact that so many people were up in arms over Kesha not being granted an injunction when the Chicago Cubs, when the Wrigleyville Rooftop owners couldn't get an injunction while their business's livelihood was being taken from them in a contract dispute. If the Wrigleyville Rooftop owners can't get an injunction, neither should Kesha's uncorroborated or unadjudicated rape claims. And neither should Peyton Manning be dropped as sponsors or as spokesman for Nationwide, Buick, Papa John's, what have you. Just like while it was perfectly in their right, it's unfair to say Patrick Kane shouldn't have been at Blackhawks training camp earlier last year. It's unfair to say that he should have been dropped as the spokesman for this or that. Getting back to my point all the time, where it's not wrong of me to enjoy Patrick Kane or Evander Kane or Peyton Manning. It's not wrong of me just because there are these allegations that have been made. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the NBA trade deadline. This is the KMP Show. We'll be right back.
KMP fans, be sure to head over to voicesofwrestling.com this week for an all-new episode of Shake Them Ropes. Each week, Rob McCarron and Jeff Hawkins bring you Shake Them Ropes, talking all things WWE and NXT. Rob and Jeff will talk all the latest news coming out of WWE, the news heading into NXT TakeOver, and get your thoughts on the build-up to WrestleMania 32. If you're into nostalgia, every week Rob and Jeff discuss a new match on the WWE.com list of the top 100 matches to see on WWE Network. We run through the greatest matches in the history of pro wrestling, and you can share your thoughts on Twitter at ShakeThemRopes. In addition to our weekly episodes, after every WWE pay-per-view, we also go live on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to the Voices of Wrestling YouTube at voicesofwrestling.com/YouTube, and you can follow along to a live video stream as Shake Them Ropes goes live after every WWE pay-per-view. So fans, do not miss all new episodes of Shake Them Ropes. Voicesofwrestling.com. That's voicesofwrestling.com. For the best in pro wrestling coverage and commentary, look no further than Voices of Wrestling. Hi everybody, Rob McCarron here, and at Voices of Wrestling, we specialize in coverage of wrestling in the US and abroad. New Japan Pro Wrestling, Pro Wrestling Noah, Dragon Gate, Revolution Pro Wrestling, Evolve, Ring of Honor, and yes, WWE and NXT. We have it all. Reviews of every major show. Podcasts that cover it all, including the flagship Voices of Wrestling podcast hosted by Rich Craich and Joe Lanza. You won't get opinion this diverse from anyone else. Subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Watch our live shows on YouTube. And check out our daily reviews. All of this and more at voicesofwrestling.com.
This segment is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek enables fans to quickly and easily discover the best deals for sports, concert, and theater events. The company's interactive stadium apps, deal score, and comparison shopping experience provide fans with the buying intelligence needed to find the best prices from trusted ticket markets and purchase tickets seamlessly. Use deal score and SeatGeek's intuitive comparison shopping by visiting voicesofwrestling.com/SeatGeek today. Welcome back, everybody, to the KMP Show, episode number 7. We spent the first half of the show talking a good bit about Peyton Manning, uncorroborated rape claims, Patrick Kane, and oddly enough, Kesha. And it's time to talk a little bit about sports. The NBA trade, yeah, I know, on a sports show, right? Who would have thought? Who would have thought that on a sports show we talk about sports? I know, right? It's crazy. It's just crazy talk. The NBA trade deadline has come and gone, and it was pretty tame by standards of years past. There wasn't Dwight Howard didn't find a new home. The reports were that the Rockets were trying to shop him, but there weren't a lot of takers, which I find surprising that Dwight Howard couldn't find a home somewhere. But I think what we have is a lot of people. And where is Dwight Howard? What's his contract? situation. Let me look that up. Okay, so yes, Dwight Howard is on for 2016-17 at $23 million. I think a lot of teams are clearing the deck for, or they're trying to keep a lot of expiring money on the books. So I'm probably next year, if Dwight Howard's still in the Rockets, I think if the Rockets aren't in it, they'll find a home for Dwight Howard, because a lot of people with the coming NBA, the perceived or the forecasted hike in the NBA salary cap due to the new NBA's new TV deal, a lot of teams are trying to, they don't want to lock up salary for next year and years on down the road. They will acquire expirings for next year, but they don't want to lock themselves in unless there's a really, you know, can't miss. And Dwight Howard at $23.282 million is probably a little up there, I think. But there's a lot of winners and losers. Every trade deadline in every sport. After the trade deadline passes, it's who won, who lost. And, you know, this is from this is from the 538 website by Neil Payne. The stats, that is. Honestly, the people that are most likely to win a trade deadline are the teams that don't trade for superstars. The teams that don't try to acquire top-tier talent at the trade deadline. For instance, the Cleveland Cavaliers and their acquisition of Channing Frye, who probably isn't going to be like the key that everybody remembers, but will be a good little role player on a team that could use what he does well as a big man. And all right, if you asked me right now who won the trade deadline, I'd have to say the Cleveland Cavaliers, because they got better at something they needed to, which is shooting, and Channing Frye helps them with that. But the truth is, according to 538, the truth is that when your team, if you're a fan of an NBA team that tries to go out and acquire big-time talent at the trade deadline for that big push to the NBA Finals to try and win it, historically, that doesn't work out very well. This is a collection, again, put together by 538.com, a great website. They're a great follow on Twitter, too. A lot of deep metric-based statistical looks at all kinds of things, political races. There's a sidebar right here, how the internet talks, and they're tracking the use of the spelling of woe, the use of owned versus wrecked, or ha-ha versus LOL, smoke versus vape, fail versus win. It's a statistical look at a lot of things that you don't really you don't really think to take a look at. And this is one of those those instances, looking at a post-trade wins above replacement of players in the NBA traded at the trading deadline and the final outcome for that receiving team. The first up is Clyde Drexler in 1995. He ended up with the Rockets in Houston, and he had a 5.5 post-trade wins above replacement. And the outcome for that Houston team was they won the NBA Finals. Obviously a great pickup, right? That's number one with a bullet. Look, see, acquiring talent works. Well, not so much. In 2003, Seattle acquired Ray Allen at the trade deadline, who had another 5.5 post-trade wins above replacement. That Seattle team missed the playoffs. Jason Kidd was acquired by Dallas in 2008, 3.9 wins above replacement after the trade deadline. They lost in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Pau Gasol, 2008, acquired by the Lakers, 3.5 wins above replacement after the trade, lost the NBA Finals. I will count that as a win, even though 538 doesn't. My point is still made, but I still think if you make the NBA Finals, that's probably the best you can hope for is to be a perennial finals contender. Some teams in the NBA are perennial playoff contenders, which is, yeah, all right, you might be in basketball hell, but if you are perennial NBA finals contenders, that's where you want to be. Because I could be a fan of a team that's perennially and continuously in the NBA finals. They lose, but all right. Now, Theo Ratliff in 2004 was acquired by Portland, had another 3.5 post-trade wins above replacement, and that team missed the playoffs. So you have, in the top five, won the NBA Finals, missed the playoffs, lost the first round, which I count as a loss. That's basically your introduction. That's the first step to NBA hell. And lost the NBA Finals and missed the playoffs. So that's 60% of the top five in post-trade wins above replacement. These teams either lost in the first round or missed the playoffs entirely. And as you go through the top 10, that number goes to 70%. 70% of the top 10 post-trade wins above replacement players at the trade deadline either lost in the first round of the NBA playoffs or missed the playoffs entirely. So the true winners at the trade deadline, the article surmises, and makes sense if you think about it. The true winners at the trade deadline are the teams that they don't have to go out and acquire another superstar at the position. You don't need to go out and acquire that big time, that next piece, that third guy in the three-star lineup you want to have, then that third star. You don't need to go out and get that guy. The teams that do well or that do better, that fare better, are already good teams, and then they use the trade deadline to either clear the decks so that they can pay their superstars, or they use the trade deadline to get better at some at a need position, at a more specific, a more specialized facet of the game, as is the case with Channing Frye and the Cleveland Cavaliers. He does offer them shooting as a shooting big man who's got some pretty good rebounding ability and statistically, according to this article, is a pretty good defender as well. And those are all things that the Cavaliers could use, especially if you are pegged to go up against Golden State. If Golden State is the team logo that you have put on the dartboard, acquiring a guy like Frye at the deadline is probably better than say, somebody going out and trying to get a Dwight Howard. Because if you're a team that needs a Dwight Howard to be in the playoffs, you're going to have to give up so much that the net result isn't going to be all that well, all that good. And speaking of big men traded or not traded at the trade deadline, as we close out the show, the Bulls, the only move the Bulls could make was to trade Kirk Heinrich to Atlanta for a future second-round pick. When it is, I don't think that's been – I haven't been able to find it. So they get a second-round pick from Atlanta for Kirk Heinrich, and the impetus of that move was to shed luxury tax salary. The Bulls now, after trading Kirk Heinrich, are only about $1.5 million into the luxury tax. So they won't have to pay. They'll still pay the luxury tax, but they won't pay nearly as much as they would have had they kept Kirk Heinrich on the roster. And the sad part is that if you live in Chicago or if you've been paying attention, Gar Forman, the GM of the Chicago Bulls, came out and said that quite specifically that the team was not trying to trade Pau Gasol at the trade deadline. This is a team who has lost Nikola Mirotic, who has lost Jimmy Butler for another 3 to 4 weeks with an MCL sprain, which is basically just a slight tear. So you'll see people say, oh, well, he tore a ligament in his knee. So yeah, well, but it's a sprain, and then the hyper-technical medical jargon. And this is a team, again, no Jimmy Butler for 3 to 4 weeks. You lost Nikola Mirotic. Doug McDermott had a 30-point game, but I think that's only because teams will score points and Jimmy Butler wasn't there to do it. And you've got Pau Gasol as your only trading, your real trading chip. And you don't, if you honestly, if the Bulls in the position they are in, after losing five straight and are now in the eighth playoff seed, if the Bulls are not looking to the future, if the Bulls are not looking to get into the lottery to try to get better, to add to their lockdown Jimmy Butler, and, you know, do you include Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic and Doug McDermott? If that's your core, if that's your future going forward, and the Bulls aren't looking to that, and instead they're saying, nope, Pau's part of our core. Pau's part of our core. We don't want to trade Pau. Pau's our guy. We love Pau. Somebody needs to get fired. If that is, there's only two options here, okay? There's only two options. Either the Bulls are lying to you when they say we weren't trying to trade Pau Gasol, or John Paxson and Gar Foreman, hereafter Gar Pax, are grossly incompetent at their job, and we need to take a look at, or it needs to be looked at whether those two should continue helming the Chicago Bulls and whether they are in the team's best interests moving forward. Because the popular school of thought, or I don't know how popular it is, but Joe Cowley of the Chicago Sun-Times, obviously here in Chicago, posited this theory that the Bulls don't want to trade Pau Gasol because they want to make the playoffs. They don't want to be in the lottery. They want to make the playoffs, not because they think they can win. Not because they think they can win, but because they don't want to look foolish after firing Tom Thibodeau and bringing in Fred Hoiberg. And Fred Hoiberg was supposed to be the guy to take this core that Tom Thibodeau had overachieved with when they were hurt and bad. And now Tom Thibodeau was supposed to come in and be the guy, say, okay, now he is going to take us to the next level. All of a sudden, Jimmy Butler doesn't want to run the offense. Pau Gasol is doing more Pau-type things, doing more diva-esque things in line with what we've heard about Pau Gasol throughout his entire NBA career. And they, John Paxson and Gar Foreman, don't want to look like fools after firing Tom Thibodeau because they didn't like him. And so they would view it as a win or acceptable just to make the playoffs. And if that's the case, they both have to go. They both really, they really have to go, because if they are not utilizing trade assets because they want to look good in the media, John Paxson and Gar Foreman, Gar Pax, need to go. If that really is the case, if that is true in any way, that they are not trading assets because they know they're not going to win the NBA Finals, but they don't want to look bad. They want to save face by making the playoffs after firing Tom Thibodeau, who had tremendous playoff success with an overachieving team, with a team that did not have the talent that this roster does. And if they're trying to save face instead of utilizing assets to get better or position themselves better for the future going forward, something needs to happen. And it's not Fred Hoiberg, and it's not Jimmy Butler, and it's not Derrick Rose. It's John Paxson and Gar Foreman. If that is in any way true, they both got to go. The Chicago Bulls seem almost rudderless at this point, and I think getting rid of those two, if these guys are doing this in any way, they are probably hurting the Bulls more than Derrick Rose, more than Fred Hoiberg, more than Jimmy Butler not wanting to run Fred Hoiberg's offense, because then these guys they're trying to play a social game. They're trying to look better instead of making the team better. And that just doesn't fly. And the sad truth is that Jerry Reinsdorf is the owner. I know his son Michael is really running things, but Jerry Reinsdorf is a tremendously loyal man. And for all, as great as that is, because you don't see a lot of loyalty in professional sports, but with Jerry Reinsdorf, you found a guy who, if he likes you, you will have a job somewhere in his multitude of organizations. You will have a job and a paycheck for life. And while that's good in some respects, it's not good in this case, because I think it may be hampering the Bulls' ability to get better, both as an organization and as an NBA team. And as macabre as it is to posit, Jerry Reinsdorf may need to die before the Bulls and the White Sox can get any better. I know it's sad. I know it's kind of bad to think, but maybe Jerry has to die. Maybe as... I know a lot of people, it's not cool. It's people like to refrain from thinking that, you know, like Al Davis needed to die before the Oakland Raiders could get any better. And in a similar vein, the George Steinbrenner needed to die before the Yankees could do what they needed to do to reset themselves and become a better become a better baseball team. And in that same vein, maybe Jerry needs to go, or he won't give it up. And if he won't give it up, maybe he needs to die. I think that's about it. I think after I call for the death of Jerry Reinsdorf,
stupid bitch.
After, I think that'll do it for episode number 7 of the KMP show. I've talked a bunch and got some things to do today. So thank you guys for joining the KMP show, episode number 7.
You want that cork? Here it is.
Let me go the other way.
You can follow the show on Twitter at KANDP show. That's KMP show. You can follow me at John's Voices. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes. Search the KMP show. You can also check out the feed at knpshow.com. Just for me, John Playtech. Thank you guys for joining the KMP show. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for going to voicesofwrestling.com/Amazon and bookmarking the click-through link. Thank you guys for joining. We'll catch you next time. I am out. Bye.